Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing,
Denise. Yes. Good morning.
It's the day after Thanksgiving,
which I will never, ever have at my house ever again.
That's a lot of things.
It is a lot of things. I am team eat out for Thanksgiving from here henceforth.
Oops. See, that's what happens when you're not from the South. Y'all don't appreciate the family coming together, the scripture, the breaking bread together, the football that is watched. Traditions should be broken.
I actually had a great time. How's Evas? How's Evas? Cleaning up at 2 a.m. is not my favorite jam.
No, that is not. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. Mm. You know, so many things happen over the course of this week. We won't be able to cover them all. So I thought we could cover the things that we've already talked about. I think it's really important to continue the thread of hateration, beginning with Lena Dunham. Obviously, there's really nothing that she can do right, at least for Black women. But she really showed her truest of true colors. You might call it white person bingo. I don't know. I felt like it was very revealing what she did and cannot be denied. So Murray Miller, who was a writer on her, you know, hit show, if you will, Girls, has been accused of sexual assault by actress Aurora Perineau. No need to mention ethnicities just yet. And for whatever reason, Lena Dunham felt it necessary to give her two cents about the accusation. First, on the 17th of November, she tweeted, "I believe in a lot of things, but the first tenet of my politics is to hold up the people who have held me up, who have filled my world with love." Okay, now, taking that out of context, that doesn't sound too problematic, right? Am I right? You think, oh, okay, yeah, that's not so bad. However, this was her lead up to basically defending Murray Miller. With her co-showrunner, Jenny Connor, they issued a statement. And in that statement, part of what they said was, quote, "While our first instinct is to listen to every woman's story, our insider knowledge of Murray's situation makes us confident that sadly, this accusation is one of the 3% of assault cases that are misreported every year," end quote. Now,
Insider knowledge. Was they inside that house? Mm-hmm. No, they was not. They insider knowledge, though.
Right. And so, you know, a lot of people have talked about this. People have called her out because for many reasons, obviously. And here we don't talk about what everyone else has already talked about. Yes, there is a tweet from Lena Dunham from August 4th, 2017. She tweeted, quote, "Things women do lie about, what they ate for lunch. Things women don't lie about, rape," end quote. Right. So she already going back on her so-called feminist standpoint within a matter of months. Now, what is interesting to me about this whole thing? Yes, she did apologize for it. And no, I'm not going to read it because it is not worth our time. However, a person named Zinzi Clements felt the need to quit after this. This was the last straw. And Zinzi Clements is a Black woman. Aurora Perineau, Miller's accuser, is a Black woman. And in the statement, Zinzi Clements is a writer. Right. And she says herself, she grew up middle class. She was moving in a lot of the same circles as Lena. However, she says even that she knows Lena. She knew Lena before Lena was, you know, in famous. And she knows who she really is. And this for her was the final straw. Now, she has named in a very long statement, she has talked about all kinds of problematic things that go on in this circle of friends. However, this was the last straw for her.
Okay.
And encouraged other Black women to do the same. I'm sorry, what women of color / Black women were repping for Lena to begin with? I mean, for real though. Like, seriously. Am I missing something?
Well, the woman with that, you know, who had that kind of access and those kinds of jobs where maybe their salaries depended on them repping Lena. Maybe they repped Lena, right? So, first of all, I want to commend what Zinzi did. I mean, we all got to get out the sunken place somehow. It happens sooner or later for some of us, but, you know, as long as we all just get there. Do you know what I mean? Like, Harriet Tubman took it, all of them. She didn't. She came back, and then some people said they want to go this second time or third time. She took them too, you know? So, Zinzi, we applaud you. But as she lists in her statement, she's known Lena was problematic quite some time. And I think what ended up happening was this idea about, well, my love for her maybe, or my friendship for her, or my personal relationship with her will somehow inform her politics. And I think it's really interesting that both Lena Dunham and Russell Simmons bring up this idea of love when talking about doing some fuck shit. Because it's such... It is. It's interesting because it's such a cover. It's a cover for like being able to say like, well, don't we just love all human beings? Even our race, like, no, like that's a bridge too far, Russ. That's a bridge too far, Lena. And so what she does is she tries to use her love as a cover for caping for, you know, an assaulter or an alleged assaulter in this case, right? And basically goes on an MRA rant about how bitches be lying.
Right.
Essentially, right? So, you know, Lena already, you know, we know who she is. And, you know, in her apologies be juicy, right? Because in this apology, she was like, I apologize with every fiber of my being. I'm like, every fiber of your trash ass being is not worth a whole lot in terms of apology. But, you know, do what you need to do to feel better.
Okay, see, now you're making me bring out quotes because that is not what she
said.
What'd you say? The last sentence in her apology was, quote, we regret this decision with every fiber of our being.
I'm sorry. So she was even trashing that. You know what I mean? She said
she regretted the decision to put her ass out there.
Yeah.
She don't apologize. That's very different.
Why would you apologize, right?
She says she apologized to any woman who has been disappointed. Is not an apology, but okay.
But you're not apologizing to the one woman you straight up called
her. No, there was no mention. No,
she not apologizing to her. Okay. She's like, first of all, I want to apologize to Murray. I've revealed some personal details about him. I want to make sure he's safe now and able to rape again. So, you know. Wow. Oh, yeah, she's a mess.
Look, the thing with me about this is Zinzi Clemens, right? She was a writer for an online publication called Lenny Letter. She says she knows that Lena's racism is well known. So my question is, ain't no other online publication you could have been writing for? I'm sorry. I don't get it. And then to like give this long statement, putting people's names out there, I hope you got their consent. And then to write, you know, that she's currently in Nigeria at a literary festival on the theme of feminism in Nigeria. One can safely assume that's Black African feminism.
Sheesh.
And, you know, she's moved by this story. I mean, it's all kinds of things. And I'm just like, I'm glad you have, you know, found your Nigerian roots and now you're feeling them. But your statement doesn't make sense to me.
What doesn't make sense to you? What?
So, like, not all of us need to go to Nigeria, then hear horror stories about sex trafficked girls who then drown on their way to Italy to then recognize
not all of us, but some of them.
That we don't need to be repping for a white girl born into affluent middle class white parent. Like, I'm sorry. I don't
know.
That
all doesn't, of us, but some of
this doesn't feel super empowering.
Look, you have been up in these European streets for a minute and you have met many a Black person.
Okay.
Many.
I know what you're about to
who
say.
Who is new to Blackness. And recently awoken Black people who are new to their own Blackness and what that means in the context of the world. They have this whole lens that they then look back on their lives with. And, you know, they be real loud about some things.
True.
Sometimes it's hard to relate. As someone who grew up in a Black neighborhood, sometimes it's hard to relate. Sometimes. But I understand.
I guess, you know what?
When you're in the midst of like an all-white environment and then, of course, we're in a society that's drenched by white supremacy, you understand very clearly, even as a child, that you need to make some compromises.
Sure.
On your own personhood as a Black person in order to survive. And if you don't have anybody to give you any level of context for that, if you don't have any level of discussions about Blackness, or you ain't even at the library reading certain things. I mean, like, it's all you in there reinventing the circle, trying to figure this out for yourself. And generally, people make the same mistakes. They rep for really, really awful white people because they're really, really, really awful white people are the only people they have access to in terms of their personal relationships. Most Black people that are in predominantly white, mostly white environments only have access to white people for their personal relationship, their friendships, their significant others, you name it. And sometimes, oftentimes, there will be really trash white people like Lena Dunham that are up in the scene. But these people can't be hermits. We as humans need human interaction. So they go out there and they build their lives with, you know, these trash human beings. Mm-hmm. And then somehow they come to Blackness, you know, they go to a retreat. You know what I mean? They like read a book. Who knows? But they come to it. And next thing you know, they look at their whole lives with this different lens. But is it always, you know, so I'm real compassionate, as you know, with Black women's processes. They come from a variety of Black backgrounds, right? Or Black grounds. Ha ha, I made that up. Ha ha. But, you know, is it always on us? Is it always on Black women to be the moral compass of every situation?
Apparently. Okay, look, so I have gone into myself. You know, I do that. I am into my mindfulness. Okay. You know what? I have pinpointed the issue. And this is a very CC specific thing.
Okay.
She ended her, or when she tweeted the screenshot of her Facebook statement,
mm-hmm.
she tweeted, Zinzi, I'm talking about Zinzi. When Zinzi tweeted a screenshot of her Facebook statement, she tweeted, it is time for women of color, Black women in particular, to divest from Lena Dunham.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my issue. I was never invested. I do not need to be told to divest. If right, this is about you, if this is about you, then make it about you. That's all I'm saying. Make it about you.
Make it about you. Especially since you've been rapping, like you just sent in your letter of resignation for Lena Dunham today, like as we speak.
Right.
And now you want everybody else to follow. And this is, I think, this is the thing that always gets us a little bit twisted up in a bunch. A lot of times we have seen, both of us collectively, actually, Black people new to their Blackness, or people in general new to a particular struggle, that come into that struggle and then make proclamations about what everybody should be doing, right?
Yes.
Because they have just made decisions about what they need to be doing.
Right.
Right. And that's annoying to tell.
Yeah. I feel much better now. Look at that. And just one quickie, but a goodie for all of the Beyonce fans. Forbes has said Beyonce is the highest paid woman in music. Okay. The reason I want to bring this up is, the hating never ceases. Beyonce earned $105 million in their counting period, mostly due to her Formation World Tour,
mm-hmm.
but also due to the success of the Lemonade album.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
$105 million pre-tax, granted, pre-tax, dethroning Taylor Swift, who will probably be back on top next year because, for whatever reason, her new album is the best-selling album thus far of this year.
Became the best-selling album in a week.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's deep. Adele finished second, earning $69 million. So still, you know, well behind the 105 that Beyonce earned. Yeah, but, you know, earned.
Adele's not on tour, you know.
No, Adele was on tour.
I mean, she'd be on tour, but, like, I feel like Adele be like, I did two dates.
No. Adele tours hard.
She
tours hard. I've gone to an Adele show. Like, her shows, I have to say, she has a voice that carries her. She does not need help like other people. Not talking about Beyonce, don't work. However, my thing is, you know, we went to a Black feminism conference where everybody was using big words like capitalism and patriarchy and all that. Beyonce made $105 million pre-tax last year.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Can we just pause on that? Can we just... Because how can everybody rep so hard for Beyonce in these circles where I had to listen to everyone calling her our queen? Your queen.
Who was saying our queen?
Oh, girl.
We went to some different breakout sessions. I don't...
Our queen. Okay, first of all, I don't believe in monarchies, but okay. But she earned $105 million pre-tax. Now, people are coming for Oprah talking about Oprah's type of capitalism. Why are they coming for Beyonce? Why does Beyonce get a pass
on her capitalist leanings?
Yes.
I mean, she is deep-dived.
Are you kidding? These aren't leanings. This is a deep dive.
This is a deep dive. I mean, she's been deep dive though, right? Like, I never saw Beyonce with Miles Redbook, but I mean, maybe I missed something on tour. she never pretended to be anything but, right? So why would we expect something from someone who isn't anything but? Here's the thing. I went to a Beyonce seminar by a person who teaches a course on Beyonce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I have to say his information, as far as I know, was pretty solid. I know when he presents as a white male. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was the only black person in the audience. And I sat down and he looked right at me and he was like, I hope it's good. You know, he was just like, okay, gave me that look like, okay, all right, let me get my shit together.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat there and it was solid, but you know, we in Europe. So of course, you know, the anti-capitalist raised his hand and was like, so, you know, in the audience, mm-hmm. a member raised his hand and was like, how could people like Beyonce and see that she's any kind of feminist icon? She is a capitalist and capitalism is the devil and blah, blah, blah. And she has all these monies and blah, blah, blah. And so I was like, so you've got all these white people on the world, like, you know, you've got all these white favorites. And not only, they don't just have the kind of wealth that Beyonce have, which is what we call self-made wealth, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've got generational wealth. You got mm-hmm. a Benedict Cumberbatch who got slave money in his bank account, okay? Yeah. Let's talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
They got generational wealth, and they got way more of it. We know that white households are, what, 3-4 times as rich as black households? And that's just off of generational wealth. That's even before you get to the wage disparity. That's even before you get to employment disparity. You know, before you get to anything else,
mm-hmm.
White people start the game way ahead, mm-hmm. right? Just because of history. And you don't ask any of these white people for this. Are you asking Bono to not be a capitalist? Because I feel like he has a lot of money. Does anybody asking Bill Gates to not be a capitalist? So all of this isn't happening. But one black woman on a come up, not really a come up. It's a $105 million in a year type come up. But you get what I'm saying.
What I'm saying is it was black people who were trying to come for Oprah and her capitalism. And I don't hear that for Beyonce yet.
You don't hear it for Beyonce yet?
No.
I've heard it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially mm-hmm. because a lot of the charity work that Beyonce does is not like super performative, right? Some of the stuff, you know, like when she went down and did the food thing in Houston, there were some pictures of her handing out some food and stuff. Right. But usually you don't see Beyonce doing that kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, there are receipts that, you know, oh, the $5 million went here to a housing project and this, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But you don't see this big press release coming from the Beyonce team saying, oh, and we've just given,
right.
You know? So that happens sometimes. I think we cannot expect things from black people that are surviving capitalism that we don't expect from everybody else. I think this idea that the bar is higher for us is a problem, that black people have to be the ones to divest from Lena Dunham, that black people have to be the ones that are anti-capitalist, that black people have to be the ones that stand up to like bad white behavior or something like that. It's like, wait a second. So we just over here, you know, Morgan Freeman in the whole world. Like, can't we just live?
I appreciate your saying that because that's how I feel when people call for Obama to not take his high speaking fees. I've never heard them say that about any other past president. So,
of course.
So thank you. Because I know you wouldn't say it as clearly for Obama.
Obama!
In our second segment, my goodness, it's just an episode of canceling people and sexual assault. I don't know what was going on in this past week, but it is important to talk about how, yes, let me be hypocritical. I don't think you can cancel Lena Dunham because she was never on, but I absolutely reject the calls to cancel Gabby Douglas. So
that was so whack. That was so whack.
Absolutely whack. And who were those calls made by? Black people.
Probably the same ones that didn't think that her hair was straight enough up.
Exactly. And I feel, and I'm really frustrated because I feel like Gabby does not get a lot of love from us But I'm not sure, you know, what the real reason for that is. So to give you a bit of background, Allie Raisman shared last Friday a message about victim blaming on the heels of her coming forward and stating that she was sexually abused by a former USA Gymnastics team doctor. We'll get to him in a moment. And she, in her statement, you know, it was a passionate statement. It was an emotional statement. It's, you know, it wasn't something that someone had written for her. It was clearly her words that she had written in notes and then she screenshotted and tweeted. And she basically said, look, let me be really clear. Stop victim shaming. And she also clearly stated it is because of you, victim shamers, that so many survivors live in fear. In her tweet, she said, we're all in this together. If we are going to create change, I need all your help. For some reason, Gabby Douglas quoted that tweet and then added her two cents, which she tweeted, quote, however, it is our responsibility as women to dress modestly and be classy. Dressing in a provocative, sexual way entices the wrong crowd, end quote. Now, I don't, when I personally read this, I don't see her responding to Allie Raisman's
whole thing.
Right.
She responds to a specific piece of it.
Right. However, that's, I mean, not that it makes it any better, but I'm just trying to put it in the context. And Simone Biles, and you know, I call that already at the Olympics. I can see that these two aren't really...
They're not frenzy frenzy.
They might be the two Black girls on the team, but they're not frenzy frenzy. Simone Biles hops in and tweets, quote, shocks me that I'm seeing this, but it doesn't surprise me. Honestly, seeing this brings me to tears because as your teammate, I expected more from you and to support her. I support you, Allie, and all other strong women out there. Stay strong, end quote. Now, and I mean, we see it there too, right? She says as your teammate.
She's a friend. Right. No.
No. Nothing warm about that. So, of course, dressing modestly doesn't stop anyone from getting raped or assaulted. And Black folks on Twitter came for her immediately and said, cancel her. Thankfully, there were more compassionate people out there. Someone, you know, I'm not going to read all those tweets, but there were some more compassionate people out there, more like our Denise, who tweeted, you know, let's talk about cancel culture. Quote, personally, I'm willing to give a lot of grace to young Black girls simply because the world doesn't. I wasn't born reading bell hooks. I had to grow. So does Gabby Douglas. And so do some of you. End quote. And I think that's really important. They need to grow too, because they think by canceling her, they're doing something right. And they're actually just perpetuating what all the things that are done wrong. Turns out, you know, first of all, Gabby does come back and gives an apology, which first her apology was quite short. And basically she was saying that she would never blame someone for, you know, their assault. And then she gave a much longer statement, She gave a much longer statement at some point. And without wanting to read all of it, she did say in this, you know, she came out as saying she had also been abused by the same doctor. Dr. Nasser, who is, let me just do the side note before we continue with Gabby. Dr. Nasser is a disgusting human being. He is a former USA Gymnastics team doctor, but he was also the team doctor at Michigan State University. And he was an associate professor at the College of Osteopathic Medicine there. At least 125 victims will speak on their assault when he goes into sentencing because he's already pleaded guilty.
Wow.
In his, he gave like a short statement of apology. He had the nerve to say, quote, we need to move forward in a sense of growth and healing. And I pray for that. I'm sorry. So
you're not the one to tell us what we need to do, boo-boo.
No. We're going to be angry right now. We might get to growth and healing later. Anyway, so this, you know, and that's the thing, though. If Allie is saying the team doctor assaulted her, can we just pause for a moment? How many people who are known to be this type of disgusting human, how many of them just stop after one? When I read Allie's words, my immediate question was, who else on the team? But no one thought about that. And Gabby, it didn't take her long to come out and say that she had also been assaulted. So, and in her statement, she, you know, tries to explain in more detail that she knows that victims shouldn't be shamed and that no matter what they wear, it never gives anyone the right to harass or abuse them. She also explained, you know, she also asked for forgiveness for not being more responsible with how she handled the situation. So what do you think about all of this?
Yeah, I mean, Gabby should not have tweeted that, of course. The initial response was not what she had tweeted. I think a lot of times what we don't understand is that victims of sexual assault, they have their own process too, though. So some of them, a lot of the process is about reclaiming control. So it's really interesting what she chose to put, like, oh, no, 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 we still have a responsibility to dress modestly because blah, blah, blah. That, in light of her coming out and saying, I too was abused, you know, is this also the sense of her trying to reclaim control of her safety, right? And say that, like, I have something that I can do to, but of course, no one reads it within that lens. And generally, people don't read Gabby with compassion. I think part of that is because Simone is great at hamming it up. You know, I love Simone. I love them both, you know, mm-hmm. But Simone is very much, she's the kind of person that knows how to play a crowd. She knows how to smile. She knows how to, you know, bedazzle people. And Gabby kind of has this resting, serious face. I don't want to call it what people call it, but you know what I mean.
I wouldn't say that hers is a resting bitch face, but I do know what you mean. It is a serious face. She's always looking quite concentrated. Mm-hmm. I wonder if it, I mean, you know, Simone is quite small, and it is, mm-hmm. it is, research shows that people feel a desire, a deep sense of wanting to protect someone who's short.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a story that white people love. White mm-hmm. and Black people. Like, you know, mm-hmm. her mom was an addict and her grandparents adopted her. All of these things just, like, evoke this desire to protect someone.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Gabby came from a very strict religious family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's tall. She, you know, she radiates confidence. Not that Simone doesn't, but in a mm-hmm. very different way.
Yeah, she's coming from a very different background. And I don't really think that she comes from the background where I feel like Simone's whole life, the way that her story plays out, you could tell this is someone that knows how to really assess what people want and how to deal with people. And she's much more of a people person than Gabby is, it seems to me. So yeah, it's a shame. I hope that Gabby finds some healing, but it really was a mild, in terms of like victim blaming, slut shaming or whatever, it was kind of a stretch when people went there with it to say we have a responsibility to dress modestly. I mean, like, people, she never negated the abuse allegations. She never said this is your fault. She never, you know what I mean? It wasn't the ideal thing to say, but it really had more to do with her process of seeing her abuser named, I think, than about any kind of feeling of blame on the accuser.
I absolutely agree. And nothing in what I didn't see was any type of reflection or turnaround from the outlets that reported initially calling Gabby a victim shamer to say, oh, let's put this in perspective. Or, oh, let's talk to, I don't know, a trained expert psychologist therapist about what might be going on for a survivor when these things play out so publicly. Just because Allie's process was one of, let me be proactive about it because I know that it's been released. I don't think, it seems that Gabby wasn't trying to be proactive.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't, but had to face it in that moment when Allie tweeted. So I don't know. My thing is, though, Black people so willingly canceling the 21-year-old Gabby Douglas after all the other things that they've already done to her.
Not everybody is ready to be a sexual assault survivor in the eyes of millions of people, as in the case of Gabby Douglas. Like, that's a lot. That's a lot. That's such a huge burden. It's a lot. Like, not everybody is ready to, you know, live that Rose McGowan life. I mean, really, it's rough. So, you know, much less to Gabby. A lot of times we as Black women are not afforded the full compass of our whole humanity, everything that entails. And apprehensions and reservations about news/blog/social media culture right now have to do with the fact that there generally isn't a lot of reflection on a lot of things, right? People make these very instant, it's almost like we get pure ego all the time. We're just getting people's initial reactions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hard for there to be a collective reflection. Like, there's no space for that. So it is what it is.
In our final segment, what are we excited about? What are we looking forward to?
Okay. Hey. So media, pop culture, stuff like that. In that sense, Spike Lee.
Mm-mm. Girl, already read a review.
So Spike Lee revamped a movie of his, one of his earlier movies.
His called, baby. That's what like launched his career.
Yes, called She's Gotta Have It. And he's turned that into a Netflix series.
Yep. It's a Netflix original series. I haven't watched it yet. I do plan on doing some serious binging this weekend. It just came out Thursday, Thanksgiving.
So your girl did research. Your girl did research. And so far...
I've read the review.
Right. So far the topics... I'm like on number two. So far the topics broached have been about, like, you know, her doing what she wants, wearing what she wants, and living this like free life. She seems to be a really talented artist. She's gorgeous. I think that, you know, very easy on the eyes, this lead, and street harassment, mm-hmm. right? And street assault. So that those topics have been broached so far, and body modification as well. I'm excited to see how it develops. I feel like the potential is great, but I don't know if Spike should have been the one to make it.
I think he should have been the one to make it.
Think so.
He said, you know, this is my baby. If anyone's going to fuck it up, it's going to be me. So he probably did that. Okay. I think the issue is, I think he wrote the first and last episode, but he directed all of them. Mm-hmm. He should have taken a cue from Queen Sugar.
And just got some other people in there.
Right. Mm-hmm. He should have had some Black women, or at least just some women directors. I don't know what the writer's room looked like, but I hope it was super diverse. But even if the writer's room is diverse, if it's still coming from the male gaze.
Yes, this is what I'm talking about. And then not only that, but, you know, at this time, an old man gaze, right? And he's talking about the sexuality, because this is not based in 1980s
anymore.
This is based in present. Right. Yeah, this is based in the present day.
Right.
And you're talking about millennial sexuality as an old man. Mm-hmm. So you have this woman dating three people, and like certain words are not even brought up mm-hmm. yet. And as of the end of the second episode, polyamory is not brought up, you know, yet, or any level of articulation of non-conventional relationship models, mm-hmm. non-monogamy, for example, has not been a something that was said, mm-hmm. even in like, you know, conversation with girls, you know, talking about their stuff. And that's weird. Mm-hmm. This is Brooklyn. These are artists. These are all educated women. Mm-hmm. And they're not using the words for what's happening. That's weird. I don't know, right? Like, I'm not like Lee age. I'm younger. I'm older than Spike Lee. I haven't seen that happen thus far. Mm-hmm. So there's some pieces of it where I feel like he's definitely, you could see his lens on it.
Yeah.
So what are you looking forward to?
Actually, I'm excited about something. I'm excited because I tweeted yesterday that I was so looking forward to celebrating Thanksgiving by watching yet again the Master of None episode Thanksgiving. I thanked Lena Waithe by tagging her, and she liked it.
See, now you can retire. So
I can retire. Done. I can retire.
We're done. We're done.
I screenshotted it.
Oh, snap.
So that I will never forget the moment when Lena Waithe liked my tweet.
Aww. Yeah, I want her to like other things, but okay.
Okay, I'm not worried about you. This is my moment. This is my moment. Thank you.
Yes, Lena. The only Lena we recognize. Yes.
And what I'm looking forward to is actually more political today, not from pop culture at all. I'm looking forward to the future of Zimbabwe. Zimbabweans are proud people. They're some of the most best educated. They had an amazing infrastructure system, one of the best in Africa. And I'm just ready for them to get their shine.
Yes, right?
For all of them who have left place, or, you know, have left Zimbabwe to work in places like South Africa and Angola and Mozambique, I'm ready for them to come back and do it. That's what I'm excited about. And I'm very happy this has been a peaceful transfer, because I didn't know it was going to be possible with Mugabe. I thought, you know, if anything, he would just die in office. So I didn't know he was going to be able to give it up like that. So So I'm excited to see what the future holds for Zimbabwe.
Yes, yes.
Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And if you can, donate. Patreon.com/TheQueerTruth. You can donate whatever you can. Until next time, peace out.
Peace out.